It's the first episode of Oscar season. So
I was going to say, this is it, right? This is the first one.
So it's, you know, we're on the red carpet. We're not quite to the ceremony yet, but this is the only episode that'll actually come out before the Oscars. And it's also the first episode after. It's the first episode after the ladies voting has gone live, which it did on Friday. That's tomorrow as we're recording this. But
I was like, I didn't know it was out. How come I didn't get notified?
we haven't actually. Yeah, so I still have to put that together. But what's fun is we can talk about and decide what the categories are for the ladies. I think it normally is just the categories at the Oscars also.
I was going to say, isn't that, yeah?
Well, I'm just saying, normally I've watched more things. And so I'm seeing, like, do we prune anything because we think there won't be enough things to get, like, a solid answer on? I don't think so.
Are you suggesting that we like do awards like not online? Like we do them not recording?
I'm suggesting we maybe live? Like don't do some categories if we don't think that people have like, if not enough of our friends have watched.
That's an unpopular opinion.
I think the covering the major categories I think this year is plenty. Personally, I'm going to be kind of upset if Oppenheimer just sweeps because I feel like there's a lot of good people in a lot of the major categories this year. And I don't think there should be. I don't think there's anyone who's like just blew anyone out of the water, honestly.
I don't think Oppenheimer is going to sweep the ladies, at least.
No.
I'd be surprised. I don't think anyone has said Oppenheimer is their favorite movie of this crop in the Discord. So,
Lindsay, have you seen all the movies, all the best pictures?
I'm missing one. I haven't seen American Fiction.
We're only missing one. We're missing Anatomy of a Fall. American Fiction, I think, Lindsay, I think American Fiction is my favorite of the 10.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, I got to go see it. But yeah, you guys caught up fast. That's crazy. What are you watching next, Ben?
Anatomy of a Fall.
That's all we have left is Anatomy of a Fall.
As you guys know, I don't know how to start the podcast. It'll either be 20 minutes of talking about the ladies or something along the lines of, welcome to Late to the Movies. My name is Ben Holt. This is a podcast where my friends and I get to fill in our movie blind spots. Each week, we'll pick a film that either I or a guest hadn't seen before and really should have by now, or in 12 years or in 24 years. Your guests, my guests, left, right, across your podcast dial. I don't know how this always happens, but here's the order. Lindsay's here.
Hello.
Greg's here.
Hey,
Craig is here looking as scared as usual. And Ray,
I don't know what your problem is.
Greg definitely joined after you too. So I don't understand the bias that Discord has about placing you last clockwise from me.
It's so funny.
It's every time. I'm not making it up. I can take screenshots if you want in the future.
We need evidence.
Greg got here after Craig maybe this time even, but whatever. Today we're going to be talking about our first movie that we're covering this Oscar season. It is Past Lives, the Celine Song debut feature starring Greta Lee and Teo Yu, and John Magaro is the guy who plays Arthur, and I'm really excited to talk about all that real quick. I guess we'll run through some other stuff though. We'll keep some of the stuff from earlier so we don't have to go back to Zone of Interest. But if there's anything any of you have watched recently that you want to talk about, now's your chance.
Yeah. So me and Ray watched Poor Things last night and then American Fiction a couple nights ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I like those. American Fiction, great. I think that might be my favorite Oscar movie for the year. That has a really good ending. I know you're talking, just mentioned. Good endings. But yeah, highly recommend that one. That one's wicked good. I honestly can't summarize what that thing is about, to be totally honest. I feel like there's a lot happening in that movie. But it is great. It's got some comedy in there too. So I love that. Poor Things is just the weirdest movie I've ever seen in my whole life. I'm sure of it. There's no way. There's no way I've seen anything stranger than that movie. There's just no way.
I can't think of anything.
I'm shocked that it managed to get an R rating. I think they bribed somebody in order to do that. Because it shouldn't have that. There's no way. That's another one I could not easily explain the plot to you. But it was good still. I enjoyed the ride. That one was definitely more about the journey. It's a little slow, or a little, I mean, not slow to start. The beginning's just even is too weird. Not that it gets less
weird. It's very uncomfortable in the beginning. Like, I was not enjoying watching the beginning. I was actually considering, like, not finishing the movie. I was like, this is too much, and I don't want to do it. But then I got through it, and then I enjoyed the rest of the movie very much. So,
yeah, I know that was all vague, but I don't want to spoil anything for either of you guys for the mm-hmm. movies you haven't seen, because they are good and they're worth
watching. I feel kind of like those people say that you need to watch The Office, and they're like, just get through the first season, and then, like, it's better after that.
Yeah. And then not that the first 15 minutes are bad, but they are an uncomfortable weird. And then it just gets to a weird weird.
Yes. Afterward. Mm-hmm.
I love Emma Stone. I don't know why she decided to make this movie.
This was an odd choice.
She likes working with Yorgos Lanthimos, I guess.
Could not picture myself ever being at a point in my life where I'm like, this is the role I want. This is what I want to do. She's just braver than me, I think, is what it is. But I couldn't do this.
It kind of reminds me of, I don't know, just this conversation now reminds me of Kate Blanchett taking the role of the monkey in Pinocchio last year.
Yeah. She just wanted to.
The monkey named Garbage. That's me. That's my spirit animal.
I haven't seen this yet, but we will be talking about it. It'll be one of the episodes that we have a spotlight on this month. I already have a crew together for that.
Ooh, so really? That's
exciting. Before Things?
Yep.
Oh boy. Okay. That'll be a fun ride for you.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be exciting to get into. Yorgos Lanthimos' next movie is already in post-production, and Emma Stone's starring in it again.
Oh my gosh.
I was pleasantly surprised to see
Willem Dafoe's in it also.
This movie too.
Yep. I didn't know he was in the next one too.
That was nice.
And Mark Ruffalo did not realize he was in it.
Yeah, I didn't know Mark Ruffalo was in it. Mark Ruffalo is great in this movie.
I love him in this.
So good in this movie. He killed me.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
You guys have like the perfect combination of wanting to watch all these movies and not watching the trailers that came out several months ago that all these people are in.
Yes.
We don't watch any of the trailers, and we don't watch what the movies are about beforehand. We just
I love going in blind to these movies.
It's so much
better. Like, yeah.
Especially with this one, just Mark Ruffalo's there. And I was like, I love Mark Ruffalo. What's he doing? Like,
oh boy.
And with Oscar movies, you never know too. Mark Ruffalo could show up and be on screen for 7 seconds and not say anything. And that happens sometimes in Oscar movies, or he's the main character. I don't even know.
Going in blind has caused some issues for us in the past, but this year it's worked out great.
I gotta follow up. What's the biggest issue that it's caused for you?
Well, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, we did not know the backstory on that one.
Oh yeah, I'm still mad about
that. That was an issue.
Was that the same year as Mank? No, that was like a year apart from Mank, right? I just remember being mad that no one knew either of the backstories.
We didn't know the backstory from May. Yeah. And then there was another one, too, where I was like, oh, man, I didn't know anything about this coming in. Oh, no, that was Mulholland Drive. That wasn't an Oscar movie.
Sure it was. It was nominated.
Yeah.
In 2001. You weren't during the parties yet.
No.
Yeah, for my part, I'll keep it short. I've been watching Oscar movies, watching some other stuff, but mostly what I wanted to talk about is a new movie from Jane Schoenbrunn, who directed the movie We're All Going to the World's Fair from a couple years ago, which I talked about on this podcast back then. And that was a movie pretty much all told through webcams and I think shot during the pandemic. And it's one of those movies from a first time director that you're like, oh, okay, this is sort of like a calling card so they can level up in their next project and like get money and like stars and stuff. And that seems what's happening. So the new movie is called I Saw the TV Glow. The trailer just came out, I think, yesterday as we're recording this. Justice Smith is in it. A couple other people that you maybe have seen in other things are in it. And it's like a real movie that's shot like with cameras on locations and stuff. I really liked We're All Going to the World's Fair. It seemed really, I thought it was really cool. It's a little divisive just because it's sort of, it's creepy, but it's really just people in front of webcams, just like sort of like affecting a mood kind of. But this is like a real movie. So I'm excited to see what happens with that. And that'll be my thing for this week. And we can get into Past Lives, which we all liked a lot and want to talk about, but also want to go to bed sometime tonight because it's a weeknight. Gross. This, am I the most recent watcher, first time watcher of Past Lives? I might be, right?
Probably. Yeah. We're like a little bit out now. I'm a little worried that I'm not going to remember it clearly, honestly.
Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, I saw Past Lives, what was it, like a week or two ago now, and everyone else has seen it within the last year, and that's how these episodes are going to go. For the most part, we're counting all of these as recent watches, so they all count for this podcast, in other words.
I watched it again last night.
Oh, perfect.
Oh, there you go. I mean, we're not that far off. I think it was like 2 weeks ago we watched it.
Yeah.
We actually watched it on January 30th, wife. It was just really good. So it feels like not that long ago because we keep talking about it.
February is short.
It's the 29th.
Less than a month. Thank God it's a leap year, or else it would sound like more than a month. Mm-hmm. But it's actually less than a month.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Here you go.
I saw it when it came out, which I was like a year-ish ago. I don't actually remember when it came out, but yeah, I'm super fancy. I see lots of movies in theaters. I get dragged along to these things. And then I watched it again last night. And it's such a lovely movie. I mean, we've talked about this, but I'm a sucker for romance movies. And like, it's just, there's a lot of layers to this one. And I just really like it. It's really good.
Yeah, I watched the same time as Greg, and I really enjoyed it. It was, when I watched this movie, it was my favorite Oscar movie that had come out so far. I don't think that's the case anymore, but I really, really liked it.
Cool. Because of just sort of the nature of this, I think we're all eligible to do a one-minute plot summary if anyone feels particularly strongly. Greg usually does them a lot.
Yeah, I don't mind. So our movie starts out with two young Korean kids, a girl and a boy who are best friends. It looks like there's a romance that's going to start between them, but the girl immigrates to Canada, I think. We follow her. She immigrates to America. She grows up. It's 12 years later, and she finally reconnects with this guy. Neither of them can travel to meet each other, and this reconnection kind of just fizzles. She meets her husband 12-ish years after that. They reconnect and he comes to America to meet her. And the movie is just 2 days that are basically a date between these two people and reconnecting, but she is committed to her husband. And it's this weird struggle of like what could have been and, you know, what feelings they do have for each other. And she has this loving, wonderful husband who's very involved. He meets the guy and the guy in the end just goes back to Korea and she cries about it or cries about this whole ordeal and is comforted by her husband.
Yeah. I guess worth mentioning, we're going to spoil these movies as we talk about them. If you're just kind of like listening to something in the background, I think more than most movies, I would say it's worth going into this without knowing how it ends necessarily. Because the tension that it brings out of exactly where it's going, especially in those last few minutes, is pretty exquisite. And you wouldn't want that to not work the way it's intended for you on a first time watch, I'd say. Okay. We've gotten better. Yeah, go for it.
To think, like, speaking of that, did anyone have an opinion of like what they thought was going to happen in the end? I was like, sure, it was going to end with her just being faithful to her husband. And like, I didn't think there was any chance of her like rekindling this spark with this guy and leaving the husband or anything like that. I don't mean to say like I knew it was going to end this way, but I knew it was going to end like her and the husband and that kind of stuff. Was there concern that like she was going to end up back with this guy? Or
I didn't think at all that she was going to end up back with the guy, but I think the tension of if they were going to have unresolved things is maybe more of it. Right. And that's not purposely vague, but I'm trying to think of how to put it. So I think, and then there's also a tension for me as a viewer going, this movie has been amazing. I hope they stick the landing kind of, thing too. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I didn't think at all that she was going to end up with it, because I feel like the movies that this movie is so clearly indebted to are all these sort of like unfulfilled romance kind of movies, which are my favorite kind of movies too. Is like, it's just better than, like, we did rom-coms last month and, you know, and they end up together. It's kind of boring, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know that I expected them to end up together, but I definitely felt a lot of, I mean, obviously, like, tension, like, oh my God, is something going to happen? Like, something feels like it's right about to happen. Like, I think something's going to happen, you know? So I was like anticipating it sort of and like waiting for it. But like, I don't know that I necessarily knew. Like, I definitely didn't feel like I knew which way it was going to go. So I was probably more in the camp of uncertainty when I watched it the first time.
Yeah, I guess that's like a door number three, is it's not like she jumps in the Uber with him and goes to the airport. But like, if over those couple days, she could have done something to really mess up her marriage, even if she doesn't end up with the guy, right?
Mm-hmm. I think I was just like along for the ride as it was happening. I think I was just confused. I was waiting to see what happened because I couldn't see it resolving. You know, I was like, oh, you know, like, I don't think this is going to end happy, but is it really just going to, like, how are they going to wrap this up and end it? You know? Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know which way it was going to go.
We've done a better job in recent months, maybe in like the last year, of not just kind of going plot beat by plot beat. And I feel like you did a pretty good job giving us all the plot stuff we need just in the summary. But I think it's worth mentioned before that this is Celine Song's debut feature as a director and writer, but she has a pretty prominent career as a playwright before this. And this movie is very specific and like very precise in how it's written. And you can pretty easily break it down into like very clear three act structure, right? They're kids, they're 24, they're 36. The last third of that is obviously like the biggest chunk of the movie, but it's still pretty clean breaks throughout. If the movie itself wasn't so clever, it's maybe the wrong word, but so like emotionally true and the performances weren't so good, I feel like that rigidity of the structure would sort of overtake the emotionality of it. And it just doesn't for me. It just all works.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Thanks. I'm like a little sick too. So like any, like even 2 seconds of silence feels like the connection dropped or something, like, and I died.
So is it allowed that, sorry.
No, you go.
Wait, what's allowed? This is interesting.
Is it allowed that I watched a special feature thing last night? Can I say stuff that I learned?
Okay. Quick, so, I have a great fun fact that I learned watching a YouTube video just before this that I'm curious if it'll come up in your...
Almost all of Ben's takes, word for word, are plagiarized from other podcasts.
Well, I'm just going to pass along facts from a special feature. This is no original content by any means. That it's very... autobiographical by the director, almost. Like, she, like, in her life, immigrated at age of 12 from Korea to Canada, and then from Canada to New York after 12 years. So that's maybe not exactly the same, but no, that's right. And then like, she also had someone, like, she got the idea for the story when her old crush from when she was a kid reached out on Facebook. Like, it was like things that happened. Like, I'm not saying necessarily that she said the whole story happened to her, but there was so much of it that was inspired by her own life, which I thought was crazy. And then it was like a similar thing, like each of the actors, like the actress and the actor, had like pieces of themselves that they brought to it as well, which was really cool.
Yeah, that's,
I think, probably made it feel really honest, like you were saying.
For sure. One thing I did know going in, just from listening to other podcasts, is that she does consider it like pretty autobiographical, like you said. One thing that I thought was cool, production note that I didn't know, I guess grain of salt because I wasn't there. I don't know if this is true, but it feels like a very kind of, I don't know, like a cool idea. The actors, John Magaro, who plays Greta Lee's husband, Arthur, mm-hmm. and Tao Yu, who plays the guy who's coming from Korea. They didn't meet until the scene where they meet. Like, she didn't let them meet in person, the actors.
Wow.
Until they were actually like doing that scene.
I wonder if that's true. That's
I do also wonder if that's true, but it's one of those things that like I don't want to fact check. Because that's a really cool idea.
Did they have like the Zoom calls or whatever?
What?
Do they ever Zoom?
Didn't they?
He's talking about the husband and the.
Okay. No, I'm confused. I thought you meant like the two main characters didn't meet.
Oh no, the two guys.
Okay. Wow.
Hi, Sung and Arthur. Yeah.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Them meeting's a really good scene.
Yeah.
All the scenes with Hi-Sung and Arthur are really good.
Yeah.
Like you said, that second act where it's just her like reconnecting over Zoom basically with
it's so much worse than it's Skype.
Yes, it is.
I guess it's 2012 and it's Skype now, but
yeah. I didn't know like basically anything about the movie. So up until then, I kind of thought it was just going to be their love story. Like, I didn't know there was like a husband coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Coming in that section, in that middle section, the husband gets introduced too after all the Skyping.
Yes, it's the very end of that middle section. Once that happens, like as soon as she says, like it's not going to work right now. Like, we'll just reconnect a little later. I was like, oh man, she's getting married to somebody else. But until that point, I thought, I was like, oh, this is going to be like a, you know, you were saying you were a sucker for romance. I was like, oh, it's a romance. It's going to be a romance. Cause I don't know if I would even call this movie a romance. Like, I don't know what this thing is.
So I think about it the same way I think about certain songs. If you know the song by the Talking Heads, This Must Be the Place. It's a song that's about love and about like the experience of love. And I feel like this is also about more like an experience of romance than it is about like a romantic connection. Right. Because there's definitely something between these people and they kind of address towards the end that it's maybe some sort of nostalgia that neither of them have really been able to let go of for whatever reason in their own lives, that it's more that or some connection for Nora to her former self that got severed at a young age, but old enough that she remembers that person, young enough that she became a completely different person. And for him, his life isn't really doing much. And he remembers like maybe stuff would have been different if this person was still around. And so it's both these like other paths that they maybe grass is greener have thought about a lot, you know? Right. But then there's also like a real connection. There is chemistry between them too. It's really interesting. So it's a cool movie.
It is. One of the things that I really loved about this movie was I keep thinking about the way that it opened, where it was like,
so cool.
Somebody else like observing them at the bar and like trying to figure out what their lives are and how they're connected. Because at the time you didn't really think much of it. And then like later on, it's like, oh wow. Okay. That was a really cool way to do that.
Is it literally the first line of the movie? Who do you think they are to each other?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think so.
And that's literally the whole movie is they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens with that kind of voyeuristic thing. And it's also that game that like, you know, everyone's played who's ever been to a bar pretty much and saw like some weird looking people on the other side of the room. Or like a group of people that you're like, the dynamic there is weird and we have to talk about it. And throughout the movie, there's a lot of shots from Marshall would know better if he was here, what like the technical terms are, but there's not a lot of close-ups of just the two main people. It's always like from a little bit farther away. Like it's always kind of voyeuristic. And I think that's cool. I don't know what to do with that, but it's cool.
He didn't say anything about what things were called, but he was like, oh, yeah, so beautifully shot. And I was like,
okay. Yeah, this one has like a longer lens than you'd normally use in this kind of scene. I don't know if that's a thing. But yeah, they're like further away. Oh, it's just cool. Or when they're walking or when they're on the boat or from further away. Yeah, yeah. These lenses are wide as hell.
These are always like my favorite Oscar movies where it's just like a story about like people doing something. You know what I mean? I describe them as like a real life, like just a regular story. Obviously, this is a bit more far-fetched or like a not your usual, like, oh, this is just something that happens to regular people. You know, we reconnect 20 years later with our, you know, childhood sweethearts.
Yeah.
I love ones like this. It's I don't know what it is, just when it's just about like the people and their emotions they're feeling and things like that, always good. Yeah, I really like go away.
We were having this conversation earlier about how I feel like I really enjoy the Oscar movies that are like original stories, because I feel like there's so many that are like, you know, it's about this one person or it's about this time in history, or you know, it's not like there's not enough original content. So the ones that show up like this are ones that I really like to dive into.
Yeah, this got into original screenplay as well as Best Picture this year.
I really like how they show Nora's relationship with her husband in this too.
Yeah, we gotta talk about Arthur.
Oh my
right?
God.
Yes. Because it's a very real relationship they have too. It's not like totally perfect, like he's like Prince Charming and just doesn't do anything wrong.
Yes.
And he doesn't do anything wrong really in the film.
But he's not an asshole, but you kind of want him to maybe make some different decisions.
Go ahead.
No, go.
Oh, so my favorite scene, I was saying my favorite scene in the whole movie, I think, is when she walks in to him playing video games after the first day that they spent together. And she says, "You were right. He came here for me." And like the fact that they reveal like that they had already had a conversation about this was just like very telling about like where their relationship is and like what it's like. And I just like love that so much.
Yeah. But also, bro, you got to put the controller down for that.
Yeah. He's like still trying to play.
Yeah, you got to have like some flowers, maybe like a pasta dinner ready to go. Like you got to up your game a little bit this week.
They were just so like open and honest with each other. It was really nice. So they obviously had a very good relationship, you know, because they were talking about this and like, you know, she didn't hide anything from him. Like she told him how complicated it was and he was like, okay, I'm here for you. And
he was very understanding about it.
Mm-hmm.
But he also plays video games at night and doesn't put the controller down in the middle of the conversation. So it was also like a normal guy. I don't know.
Yeah. I like that. He's not like the typical way that he described, like the movie and this character calls it out himself. He's the evil American husband that took you away from your childhood love. And there's something nice that, or like clever or witty, I don't know about the writing, where he's not like a fully toxic, like terrible partner about this whole situation, but he is still really insecure about it. And it's still presenting in certain ways that he's, you know, probably isn't going to look back on this week and be like, I did a great job.
I like to, like, at first, I think when they introduce him, like, not when they first meet, but in that third act where it's, you know, the 12-year jump, he's like speaking Korean too. And I was like, oh, like he learned Korean for her and everything. And I was like, that's when I thought they were just going to have him be like this absolute perfect person. And then a little while later, like, well, he knows a couple Korean words. And he doesn't say it very good either. You know what I mean? I'm like, but he's kind of trying. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, you know, now it's a lot more, you know, grounded in reality. Like, oh, he's trying. He can do a couple. But then at the same time, she mentions like, oh, but my parents love him. he like plays games with them. They're like super into him. He's so like, you know what I mean? So, you know, he's like meeting halfway there. And I don't know, his depiction, I think, is one of my favorite parts of this movie.
It's so good. I haven't seen that guy in a lot of other stuff. He's been in a couple Kelly Reichardt movies, her last couple, First Cow and Showing Up from last year. But he's so good. It's such a interesting portrayal. And there's so many, when I think about like the questions, like the, what would you do about whatever situation, this is a great movie for what would you do in this situation? And the fact that you can put yourself in any of the three characters' shoes and think like, in their shoes, I would react differently in this situation than if I was in that person's, you know, place. And it's just so interesting. One thing I do before I forget to mention, I think the best conceit of the writing is that both Nora and Arthur are writers. And so you can get away with writing lines like, you dream in a language I can't understand. Which in like other movies would just sound so hacky and so flat, but you're like, no, these are artists. This is probably how they would talk to each other. And the fact that he sees this as like, this story is too good for me to mess up, so you have to go hang out with this guy that I kind of hate.
As far as like putting yourself in their shoes, you definitely can't. This movie, I've thought about a lot. Like, I feel like I still keep coming back to this movie a month later. And I've already told Ray a couple times that I won't let her go hang out with her Korean sweetheart, like childhood sweetheart from 20 years ago or whatever. I told her it's not happening. I just can't understand what they're talking about.
So I think that's the big question for me. As far as Arthur goes, one, are you cool with this happening? Even as much as he's cool with it, are you like doing an ultimatum? Are you putting your foot down? More importantly, are you going to that bar with them on the last night that he's in town?
Okay, and like, that part,
and knowing that that's how it's going to play out, that you're just going to be like alienated from that conversation most likely, but you just have to sit there and be like, I'm here too.
I think that's the best scene in the whole movie. Yes, honestly,
that scene's awesome. Angle.
And I can't get over it either because he knows like a very little bit of Korean, so he probably picks up none of it. But they keep saying, what's that the fate thing?
Inyeon.
Inyeon. He keeps Hyesung keeps saying it, and I'm like, he knows that. Like he can hear him talking about this. And in the subtitles, obviously, he's saying that she has it with the husband.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, like, for the husband, he's just sitting there. This guy, they're just trying, and he's just, Inyeon, Inyeon, Inyeon. And I'm like, oh, that's gonna be awkward, right?
They're talking about fate over there.
That's probably fine.
That's probably okay.
Yeah. I do like that at one point, Nora does turn to Arthur and goes, he's talking about you. And sure, Arthur's like, sure he is. Yeah. I bet he is.
Yeah. Fate. Yeah, he's talking about you.
Arthur plays it so perfectly. Like, I mean, he lets her have the moment she has and like trusts her and like is honest about how he feels about it and like shows that it's like hard for him to deal with, but not in a way that like centers him as like the main attraction, you know, but like doesn't shut her out. Like, I can't imagine it being navigated more perfectly.
He handled it so gracefully. Like,
he's a better husband than me. Because, I mean, realistically, it's not a big ask for him to just be like, could you not go see him? Right? That's not that big of an ask.
I mean, it wouldn't be that crazy of an ask, but like, he lets her get there on her own, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm. That's why I think it's more impressive, because it really would not have been that big of an ask for him to just be like, hey, right, you know, it's gonna really bother me because he's not, and he's just like, oh no, I'll let it play out.
Yeah, and you'd think like maybe if he is that kind of guy, and they do the first day, and then she comes back, and he's like, yeah, you're right, he's here because of me. Then maybe he's like, oh well, then you can't see him anymore. But I think you just can't let yourself be a chaperone, right? Like, you can't let yourself get put in that role. You either don't go or say you can't go.
Are you talking about the bar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did they say? I think they said he was a tour guide, right?
Yeah. He'd be a bad tour guide. He's never even been to the Statue of Liberty.
Mm-hmm. That I didn't know how to feel about that either. Like, I felt like I had to like justify it to myself when she's like, "Oh, I brought him to the Statue of Liberty." He's like, "Oh, I've never been to the Statue of Liberty." And I was like, "Well, he lives in New York. If you live in New York, you don't want to see the Statue of Liberty. This isn't weird."
Yeah. Which he could have said, but he was being like a little bit passive aggressive, being like, "Oh yeah," he didn't say "I've never been there." He said, "We've never been there." He said, "Like we've never gone there together."
Uh huh. Mm. A little bit aggressive. I legit think I turned to Ray and be like, "Well, yeah, when you live there, you don't want to see that. That's like
it's all tourists."
Yeah, it's all tourists. And I'm like, why am I defending this right now?
No, it's cool. Let her do her thing.
Did you guys, is what High Sung did, is it wrong? Is he the bad guy?
I don't know that there's a bad guy.
I don't know if there is either. I think he crossed a line, though. I don't think this is something you can do.
You can do it. Should you do it, I guess, is what you're asking, right?
What is it?
Should you do it, though? Should, yeah. Like, legally, you can do this, but...
It's hard to tell because it is hard. Like, was he just trying to, like, you know, get that closure, or was he hoping, like, she runs back to Korea with him? Like, obviously it's never like specified what he's hoping to get out of this, but it kind of seems like he's hoping for a little more than just closure. You know what I mean?
I feel like he's not admitting to himself that he is hoping that she is wanting to run away with him. I think he's like marking this off. Like, he's lying to his friends back home, but even beyond that, I think he's a little bit sort of like not letting himself go there. But then in the scene in the bar, when he says, like, "I didn't think it would hurt this much to like your husband," I think that's him kind of like, they kind of go cards on the table in that scene in a really interesting way. That is so, so electric. I mean, that scene's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I feel like my heart is breaking talking about all this.
Yeah. And what a great line that is, too. It sucks that I like him. And I... like that is like, didn't think it would hurt that much that I like him.
He's so pleasant to High Sung too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're very pleasant to each other. Aside from like you said, is it a huge violation that this dude is even in America?
Yes.
And like hugely insulting to Arthur in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Ugh.
It's tough.
I don't know. Right? I don't blame him too much, you know? I mean, like, being at a point where he didn't feel settled enough to, like, follow through with the girlfriend he was with, there was clearly something that he needed to resolve, you know? Like, and honestly, good on him for taking the initiative to resolve it, you know? And, like, maybe it hurts more for a while, but maybe it's closure, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like closure. He's smiling in that Uber on the way to the airport.
Her walking him to the Uber too.
Ugh.
Like,
that might be my favorite scene of the year.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've been holding off a little bit, but yeah, that's okay. So the structure of this thing, Arthur lets them go. There's a great moment where the camera kind of lingers in the apartment with just Arthur, and he takes like a big exhale, and you figure like, yeah, he's going to go play Rocket League. He needs it. And then that shot's what, 7 minutes long, 6.5 minutes long. They come down the steps of the brownstone. It goes left, you know.
She walks back all in the way time, back to Korea,
right? We're going right to left. Yeah. They're heading west towards Korea. Kind of. They're from New York, you're sort of like either way, right? I guess you go west, but it's not like that much farther if you went. Anyway. Kind of back in time, right? They roll it back. They go left. The camera, this is all one shot. They stand there awkwardly. There's like so much, like, I think we've all had these moments of, even if it's just like a couple minutes before like your vacation's ending and like the Uber is coming to get, take you to the airport from your hotel. And there's still like this feeling of desperation.
I swear they walked 10 blocks in that scene. I was like, the Uber's picking you up right outside. Where are you guys going? Yeah. And they don't talk.
The Uber comes to you. You don't have to do this. And yeah, they don't talk this whole time because there's like too much to say. And then it's just getting like the tension's just rising. And there's like, oh, the Uber's coming in 2 minutes. You're like, somebody say something, please. But then
there's a minute and a half of silence.
Yeah. And just to do the overall structure of this thing, then some stuff is said right before Hyesung gets in the Uber. Then she walks back. She mentions before that she doesn't cry anymore. She bursts into tears and hugs Arthur. And that's pretty much the end of her story.
But in the midst of that scene, there's a couple cutbacks to them as kids.
Yes.
That one fucking or two. Killed for me. That was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
It was really cool. Really well done.
So in the first, not even third time-wise, but in the first third chronologically, their chronology, the last time that they walk home together, they also don't say anything. And kind of start walking in their opposite directions. And then it's Hyesung who says, hey, and she goes, huh? And then they go back to that moment. That shot's amazing when it happens the first time. And then she goes up the stairs and he continues down and they stay on that for a while.
They take different paths.
And then drop the 12 years later hammer. Well, I guess they show her good, like immigrating after that, but still. And then this time it does it again, but it's nighttime in this shot, but it's the same, the kids are in the same place on the same staircase. And yeah, that was like, oh fuck. That I wasn't worried about them landing, like sticking the landing anymore. And then what he says from there is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly,
I want to just monologue, cause I know we all have a lot of feelings about this. So if anyone else wants to say this part.
Was so upsetting. I mean, it was a month ago, but like I said, this movie really stuck with me. I don't think I could even give you an idea of what they say right before the Uber. Like, I can't even remember it. Like, it was just too much. Like, it was too much. I couldn't handle it. I don't know what they talked about, but I remember the feeling of this whole scene. I remember exactly how I felt when it was happening. And I remember, obviously, her crying as she hugs, like, Arthur in the end. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It was they talk about what if the next past life is already happening. And it's their life to be together. And I think he says, like, I'll see you then.
Yeah, I'll see you then.
Which is amazing. I mean, that's, You dine out on having written that line for the rest of your career if you're Celine Song, I think.
It's too bad that this is a podcast because everybody just looks so distressed.
we're all, however we present our anxiety, I'm getting more manic. People are crying.
Craig just looks shocked.
Craig is
shocked.
Non-responsive. We are sending emergency services to Craig's house as we speak. A couple of people on this call have been together for 2/3 of their lives, but as someone who's been rejected a lot, the moment earlier in the bar when they're like, when he sort of is like, after he says, you know, I didn't think it would hurt this much to like your husband. He's like fully accepted. This isn't happening at this point. And they have like, there's this moment of kind of catharsis where they can sort of joke about it and kind of talk openly about like, oh, who do you think we are to each other in a different life? Because like, obviously we have this fate, this destiny, these 9,000 layers. Is it 8,000 layers? Whatever, 8, however 000. Many thousand layers. We have the 8,000 layers in a different life, you know. In one of our past lives, what were we to each other? And they kind of joke about the different situations they would have been in. And it's more of like a joking kind of like, oh, okay, you know, whatever sort of thing. Not whatever, but like, they're like,
yeah, we sit next to each other on a train.
Yeah. We'd hate each other. We would cheat on each other with, you know, whatever. And that's also the, oh no, I forgot what I was going to say. There's a great bit in there too. No, like at the bar that we haven't mentioned yet. That's when she also says that person that you're thinking about doesn't exist anymore, but they did exist and that was real. And she like validates his emotions while also like breaking it forever. Like in a nice way, which is, you know, a really important thing. And is also so well written and so well performed and act like, I mean, the performance movie. I think we've already said enough are amazing, but bears repeating.
Yeah.
Anyway, then calling back later to what if this is a past life and we're already in the future life before he gets in the Uber? It just fucking kills. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting chills.
I think each of us have said that at this point, but again, that also all bears repeating. A good movie.
Good movie.
Lack of a better word, the first date, his first day with her, gives me some like Before Sunrise vibes where they're just like wandering around New York, like going to different points of interest and like talking about their lives and things like that. And it does give off a romance movie vibe, but yeah, then you're uncomfortable about it because you're like, she's married. What are you doing?
I was going to just kind of jump like piggyback on that. So if you want to keep going first.
Oh, I did know, like that. She talks about her husband a lot during that day. I notice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Girls do that.
You know, about from all the dates you've been on, they're always just talking about their husbands.
Like, I'm using the wrong apps. Clearly. Yeah, no, that's best practices to kind of like make that clear, right? Set boundaries in like a
well, and she like keeps talking about his girlfriend as if like they're still in, and he's like, I'm not with her right now. Like, she really wants that to be the case, so it can just be clean. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah. So about Before Sunrise, when I joined the Oscar server, watching this also got huge Linklater vibes, huge Before Sunrise. The last time the three of us were on one of these podcasts together, we were talking about Before Sunrise and Richard Linklater. And that movie's not just the wandering around a city and talking, but also throughout his career, his obsession with time and the way that this movie is very clean, 12 years. What are these people to each other over time? How does the relationship dynamics change over time? That's something he's obsessed with. No one had mentioned Wong Kar-wai's movies yet, so I said In the Mood for Love. It's also like kind of a touch point for this, and you guys should check that out too. And then I went back and listened to, I think it was like a June 2023 episode of the Big Picture podcast, which I mentioned a lot because that's when Past Lives actually came out. And within 5 minutes of that one of the hosts mentions, I was thinking a lot about the films of Richard Linklater and Wong Kar-wai while watching this movie. It's like, oh, cool, we got that too. So we're just as smart as them, maybe. But so I was thinking a lot about those two directors and their movies throughout this. Definitely a huge touch point for this thing. There's something about carousels and time travel, right? That's a thing.
Oh.
Because they're having that conversation in front of a carousel. And I feel like carousels in fiction usually represent time travel. Is that from Catcher in the Rye, too?
If you sit on a carousel and it goes in reverse, you go back in time.
Have you ever seen the terrible movie Now You See Me?
I don't think so.
It ends with Mark Ruffalo on a carousel doing magic.
Yes. I have seen this.
Yeah, yes.
And he's like, I was magic the whole time. This carousel is magic. The movie fucking sucks. And they called the second one Now You See Me Too instead of Now You Don't. And I'm still mad about it. I've brought it up on the podcast a lot.
Yep, they missed an opportunity there.
It was right there. Anyway, I was thinking a lot about Wong Kar-wai and Richard Linklater while watching this movie. I'm going to cut that whole bit. I'm sorry. This should be more interactive of an experience for you. I had only seen Greta Lee as sort of like a secondary or tertiary character, usually in like a comic role. Any of you watched Russian Doll, for instance.
Yes.
I didn't know she had my favorite dramatic performance of the year, baby, in her. As someone that I've mostly seen as a supporting character in like sitcoms. So, Hope to see a lot more from her because she's amazing in this. Teo Yu, the main actor in this, is amazing also.
Why do you think she didn't get Best Actress nominee?
She should have. I don't know. I honestly don't have an answer for that. It's an amazing performance.
This movie, it's just the three characters, basically. I mean, obviously, there's the children and stuff, but really, it's those three characters. So they're carrying the whole thing. It's all their performance, really. I mean, obviously, the writing's very good and, you know, everything. But, I mean, you're with them so much of them just talking. It's all how they deliver all this. I'm very surprised she didn't get a nomination.
Like, there's a bunch of people that I could point to and be like, I don't know. We already mentioned Ana de Armas from last year, but there was also, she wasn't even last into that conversation, right? That was the Andrea Riceborough thing that got really weird. And they're like, they're making up white women to put in this category in front of other people. Like, you know, that's sometimes how it feels.
See, I'm surprised too, because with the best actress Oscar in general, like half the times the nominees are from some movie I haven't heard of that did not make it into Best Picture.
Like,
and the other half of the time is, while they are like not a supporting role, they are also not the main character.
Mm.
And now you have the opportunity where you have one where it's getting into Best Picture. She is the main character, like, mm-hmm. for certain, and she doesn't get it.
Yeah. Well, in Nyad's defense, Annette Bening plays Nyad, and in Maestro's defense, if you believe that last shot of Carrie Mulligan in Maestro, she is the Maestro reference in the title. So
she is not the main character.
The title of the movie comes up over Carrie Mulligan's black and white face. So I don't know what to tell you.
That's interesting. I didn't catch that. I haven't been involved in that chat.
My show, I think, is going to be unanimous in our group as the worst of the 10. I might be wrong. Yeah, but I mean, these three actors were all awesome and they got nothing.
Yeah, that's crazy. But I mean, it's a pretty small movie, relatively speaking, right?
Yeah,
like, we can't all be Nyad.
For the most part, I think a lot of the those acting categories are pretty competitive right now this year. I don't think I mean so much as like who's gonna win, as much as like who like is deserving of a win, like who like. Like the actor in a supporting role one, I feel like there's like three people in there who I want to see win, you know what I mean? And I feel like that's the same thing in almost every one of these categories.
Yeah, I agree. Sometimes there's some years where you look at the list and it's like, this person shouldn't be in here. Like compared to this one, there's no way. But this year I think you're right. I feel like it's pretty even.
Yeah, I hope that they all just have a good time because only one of them gets to win. Is it worth doing ratings? I guess it can be for this month. We'll still do ratings. So on a scale of 0.5 to 5 on any scale of what you're choosing, aside from stars, what would you give Celine Song's debut directorial feature, Past Lives?
I'm ready.
Go for it.
I'm going to give this one I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 obnoxiously far away Ubers.
I'm going to do 5 out of 5 dropped Skype calls.
I'm going to do 5 out of 5 artist retreats.
Yeah, if you got a crush on someone, you cannot let them go to Montauk to an artist retreat. He should have chaperoned a little bit. I'm going 5 out of 5 layers of Inyun. So a question to thread through this month. What's a category you wish was at the Oscars but isn't?
I feel like I had an answer for this. I feel like I've spoken about it, but I don't remember what I said.
For me, it would be like my Oscars cheer moment, you know, like when The Flash entered the Speed Force.
That's it.
My hashtag Oscars cheer moment. Remember that from a couple years ago?
Oh, I remember. I think I said voice acting.
Oh, okay. Oh,
you did say voice acting. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a good one, actually, because you just don't, they don't nominate anyone for voice acting.
That is a category, I want to say, maybe at the Annie Awards. And let me see, like, who was up this year for it.
I mean, like, we talk a lot about, like, best scene or, like, most ridiculous scene. I don't know. That's probably not, like, a film industry thing that they focus on, but
I'm looking at it more of like a for fun category, not something like, you know what I mean? Something that like would put in between categories is what I feel like I'd come up with. But that, because that's a good one for it. Best scene, weirdest scene. That's what it should be.
Yeah. 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 That's your, the terminology you use at your party is weirdest, right? Right.
Weirdest scene.
Weirdest. Okay.
I don't even know if we can do that this year. It's just a
clear winner. Yeah. Okay. Is it just like selections from four things, or is there just one like standout option?
I think the top five would all be from Four Things.
Okay.
If I had to pick five of the weirdest scenes this year, they'd all be from Four Things.
And I think it would be hard to narrow it down.
So this is kind of cheating, but just taking from other awards shows, I think the Indie Spirit maybe does two that make a ton of sense. Debut feature. So it's just people who had like their first movies come out this year as directors. So that's like a good way to recognize, you know, up and coming people. The whole thing's about like, let's make more people household names. Let's make more people famous and like make the industry stronger. And in the same kind of thing is like breakthrough performance. So I don't know if it's like only actors under 25 or if it's like starring in their first feature film. But I know at the Indie Spirits, like Dominic Sessa from Holdovers, who played like the main kid in Holdovers, got an award. And wouldn't it be cool to highlight someone like that at the Oscars, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or a category that like Celine Song probably would walk away with at the Oscars for a debut feature for a director. Stuff like that. Corey Jefferson for American Fiction. It's also his first movie. So that would be actually be like a pretty competitive category, I think.
Yeah, I think that would be cool. And I feel like they should have time for it since they're just going to like text us who won all the technical categories or something anyway.
They'll just like flash a QR code on the screen. It's like, yeah, we made a GIF about it. Go watch that.
And then tell us about the museum for 15 minutes.
I do like the museum.
Yeah, it's a cool museum. I don't live there. No one goes to Los Angeles. There's nothing to do besides the museum, I guess.
Museum, yeah.
It's much more interesting places to go to.
I know. I'm actually jealous. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the food scene seems pretty good.
I think that's probably true.
Here are your five nominees for Outstanding Achievement for Voice Acting in a Feature Production at this year's Annie Awards. It was Chloe Grace Moretz in Nimona, Jack Black as Bowser in the Super Mario Brothers movie, Trezzy Gazal, who played Gwen Mallard in Migration, David Hornsby, who was Joker in Merry Little Batman, which I didn't know there was a Batman movie this year. But the guy who jokered it up did a great job, I guess. And Hokkatsu Matsumura in Suzume, which was the new movie from that guy that people like.
Oh, yeah.
You guys remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everyone knows.
Yes. Weathering With You is what I'm thinking of. Also, Your Name from a few years before that. Pretty big anime flicks from the last few years. So those were the people. There's only one person with multiple wins. This is fun. Who do you think it is? So this category has been around since 1994. Only one person has multiple wins.
Mark.
It's Hamill. No. Well, maybe. What's his name? Alan Tudyk. Tudyk.
No. He won in 2013 and 2019 for playing the same role in a movie and its sequel.
A Disney movie.
A very big Disney movie in 2013, and then a slightly disappointing one, as I understand it, from 2019.
Is it Frozen?
It is Frozen.
Is it, I don't know, who plays Olaf?
Yeah, it's Josh Gad.
Oh, okay. I didn't know he played Olaf.
That's his whole thing.
I don't know.
Yeah. And like pretending to be a little gay in the live action Beauty and the Beast, but not so much that they can't show it in China.
Right.
It's a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just fancy.
He like winks at a man a couple times and Disney's like, our 30th first gay character.
I thought of another category that I want, by the way. I want best good boy and I want the best animal actor for the year.
That's an awesome one. I was thinking best adult film.
They've got a lot of awards for that.
I want an Oscar.
An Oscar.
Anyway, thanks, guys. Anything else we should talk about? I'm just excited for the Oscars.
I'm so excited.
I wish I was going to be there with you guys.
Why not, Lindsay?
Why?
Next year, Lindsay.
Yeah.
I'll have to plan again next year. Yeah.
Can we set up like a tablet on like a robot or something?
I've already started thinking about this, like what the best option is.
Yay.
We've done that
I
before,
will be bugging
right?
you all in the chat. But I did try to FaceTime in 2 years ago.
Okay.
I remember specifically in the intro when we had like tennis balls, that tennis ball music video situation. Wasn't it like Beyonce or something? I don't know.
Yeah. So there was that. So that the year before that was the Train Station Zoom Oscars. And then the next year, some of us were in person, but that, yeah, I remember you.
Trying. Yeah. But I wasn't there. Yeah. So I was, I FaceTimed a little bit, but then it did not work. And I just chatted with you guys on the Discord.
Mm-hmm. It'll work this year.
Yeah. Okay. I will be involved in some way. I'll make sure of it.
Any like wild predictions? This is the only episode that comes out before the Oscars. Like, who's getting slapped this year, do we think?
Anthony Hopkins is getting slapped, and I think it kills him.
And for the same reason.
Yes.
He makes an off-color remark about Jada Pinkett Smith.
Oh, yikes. Oh, my God. I hope there aren't any jokes about Jada Pinkett Smith on the stage. That would just...
Who would be brave enough to do one?
Well, he's banned, right? He's not allowed.
who's gonna stop him if someone makes a joke about Jada?
Because they had slap jokes last year. I think there's still gonna be slap jokes this year, at least one. We'll see though.
I hope not.
I think there's gonna be.
I haven't been tuned into much news about the ceremony and what they're doing. You said
who's the host?
Announcements, but
I'm assuming they're just doing it. They're just making us watch Jimmy Kimmel again until like we get our shit together. Like we're being punished for something cosmically, I assume.
Yeah.
One cool thing that I posted in the Discord, they're going back to a thing that when I saw the headline, I was like, oh yeah, they just did that a couple years ago. And they're like reviving a concept that they last did in 2007. I was like, oh, I guess I'm wrong about that. But for all the
years ago,
for all of the four acting categories, they're having five past winners introduce the category.
I like that. It's cool.
Yeah. And so then you can play a fun game of like, oh, I remember that guy. He sucked in that movie, or I don't know, something like that.
Well, he shouldn't have won.
Yeah. It'd be someone like we're all embarrassed about.
It'll be Will Smith.
Surprise. And you just see like Anthony Hopkins is backstage after dying from a slap, and you're like, who let, I guess they needed five, and Will Smith's the only other best actor winner here. They have to let him on stage. Like, we thought we invited Sir Tony Hopkins, but we can't find him anywhere. He's just been slapped and pushed into a broom closet. Anyway, this episode ended 45 minutes ago, and I appreciate you all for hanging out tonight. That's gonna sound weird to viewers when the runtime of the episode on their podcast app is 43 minutes, but it's true in real life. Anyway, you can find our stuff on Linktree, linktr.ee/late-to-the-movies. One of the things you can find there, there'll be a way that you can, the fan, vote on the ladies this year, because March 10th is really early in the month. We'll do the ladies episode after the Oscars. It'll be fun. Maybe you can look at it as writing wrongs of whatever, if somehow they, like, if Green Book wins again or something. I don't know. And, like, so you can feel like you have some control in life, and even though you don't, go ahead and vote for the ladies. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Past Lives was really good.
It was so good.
Yes.
Go watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks. See you later, guys.
Bye. Bye.